The only reason I've been given precedence over seniors like Mr. Ram and the Honorable Judge of retired Judge of the High Court is because I have a flight to catch, and I seek your indulgence for my inability to speak in Hindi, again like the speaker immediately preceding me. And unlike her, who gave a very broad perspective of the issue, I will limit myself to the subject that is spelled out here, that is that we are going to be speaking essentially on the recent judicial contempt proceedings, which I interpret to mean the midday proceedings, because the other issue, namely much as it is of great constitutional moment and topicality and immediate concern to the citizens of India and more particularly Tamil Nadu, namely 356, did not quite involve contempt. So I am limiting myself to this, also because it concerns us in the media. We are in the business of uncovering truth, and this particular proceedings, midday proceedings, stand apart from all the judicial, from all the contempt proceedings that have arisen from time to time, for the reason that this is a test case for a recent amendment that was made to the contempt of court law concerning truth being offered as a defense. Whether truth could be a valid defense in a contempt proceeding. And this particular case is the first test case because the amendment was made as recently as in 2006 and it came into force only in March 2006. And please allow me to go into a little bit of background to this amendment. We need to understand what exactly prompted the government, the current government, to make this amendment, because this government is not known to take chances with the judiciary. They wouldn't want to do anything that would annoy the judiciary in the least, especially not Mr. Bharadwaj, who is in charge of the law ministry. Do not think on the basis of Mr. Raja's speech that the rest of the government is as feisty, as willing to take on the judiciary as he is. You know, in fact, it's hard for somebody like me who comes from Delhi to believe that Mr. Raja and Mr. Bharadwaj are part of the same cabinet. It was rather refreshing to see him speak so candidly. And I must say that much of what he said was well within what we consider to be bounds of fair criticism. I would really like the Supreme Court to see if they can test whatever he said. And I really appreciate the spirit he showed in the case that Mr. Karat mentioned, that concerning the empowered committee, the Environment Ministry. It's really very unusual for the government to say to the court, to its face, look, what you are doing is, you know, off the line. You are exceeding your limits. This was one very rare instance, and not only did he show the courage to do so, he got away with it, he made his point and he got his way. So that's really something very remarkable. I really hope that the other ministers draw a lesson from it and realize that it's not the end of the world to, you know, take on the judiciary. Because it's somehow considered politically correct to be always on the right side of the judiciary, as if judiciary is some gospel. But we know from this very stray, very irresponsible observation of Justice Agarwal that it's not quite so. It's time we check those scales from our eyes. Anyway, coming to this point about midday proceeding, about this amendment that was made in 2006 concerning truth being offered as a defense, the background is that there's been a state of judgment delivered by the Supreme Court where truth was expressly denied as a defense in contempt proceedings. The last case was in 1993 in one Pritam Lal case, where they said, no, it doesn't matter if what you are saying is truthful, what you are concerned is what you have said amounts to scandalizing the judiciary, and that is reason enough for us to hold you guilty of contempt. So this is the kind of position they very directly, very unabashedly took. So, Satyameva Jayate may be a national motto, but it will not get in the way of our, of the exercise of our of our judicial power to hold you guilty of contempt. Now, against this backdrop, sat this high-powered commission headed by Justice Venkatachalaya, which gave a report in 2002, and as some of my preceding speakers mentioned, it recommended that it is time we had such an amendment made. But the amendment that commission proposed was to the Constitution and not to merely this legislation called the Contempt of Courts Act. And it had a good reason to do so. It was a high-powered body headed by a former CBI, and it had a whole lot of legal pundits sitting on it. They considered this issue very closely, and they came to this conclusion that in the Pritam Lal case, the Supreme Court said very clearly that we are not bound by ordinary legislation when it comes to the exercise of our contempt power. Why? Because we derive this power directly from the Constitution. So even if you amend any ordinary legislation, it will not encroach on our sovereign right, on our inherent power to hold you guilty of contempt regardless of truth. Now, therefore the Commission said you have to, the Constitution Review Commission said you have to amend the Constitution to have the desired result, which is that truth should be allowed as a ground for defense in a country that holds supreme majority as its national motto. Right? Now comes the role of the current government. Before that, there was an attorney general who was consulted, who said, no, we don't quite need to amend the Constitution because you can trust the Supreme Court to be, the High Court to be responsible. They will, even if they derive the power directly from the Supreme Court, they will give due respect to the law. That's the opinion that the Attorney General gave. Armed with that opinion, the government said, we need not go into this hassle of amending the Constitution. Let's have this amendment. Which says what? An amendment to the Constitution, to the Contempt of Courts Act. It says what? It doesn't simply allow you to offer truth as a defense. Number one, I mean, there are some problems with it. Number one problem is, it says the court may. It does not say the court shall allow you to offer truth as a defense. It says the court may. It's a discretionary power. And when, and how does it exercise that discretion? It will consider whether the claim you are making of truth is in public interest or not. Meaning, satyameva jayate is not good enough. It has to be truth that is qualified by public interest. And that's not good, if that is not bad enough, I mean, public interest is a very subjective term. What is public interest to you may not be public interest to the judge. Now, if that is not bad enough, that same provision goes on to say that another qualification you will have to fulfill is, it will have to be, you will have to invoke this defense in a bona fide manner. Now, is there any objective criterion to determine whether, say, midday exposed this issue of conflict of interest concerning the then Chief Justice of India in a matter that rocked Delhi like never before? You know, the Delhi ceilings case. I wonder if I would need to go into a little bit of background about that case. It was about residential premises in Delhi being misused for commercial purposes, and it was discovered that while the Supreme Court was passing a series of orders for sealing such premises, his sons had entered into a business relationship with two builders who were heavily into building malls around Delhi, in places like Noida, Faridabad, and Noida, and Gurgaon. And the properties they were building, the value of theirs was appreciating because businesses were being driven out of Delhi. Now this was, if this information had come to light while these proceedings were on, there is no way the then Chief Justice of India, Justice Y.K. Sabharwal, could have heard it. I mean, you should have seen, I mean, you need to see it to believe it, the kind of outrage that was there on the streets those days. There was something like a bunch even in Delhi at that time, and Supreme Court did not take objection to that. There was strife, And it was all on this issue. Look, we have not been given proper opportunity. It's not fair. You can't do the excessive, authoritarianism on the part of the court, blah, blah, blah. Now, had those agitators been aware of this particular little deal that his son had on the side with these builders, do you think they would not have raised that issue? Do you think the then Chief Justice of India would have had any option but to recuse himself from those proceedings? Now that's truly the test. Now, for whatever reason, this valuable piece of information came to light after his retirement. And this amendment that was made in 2006 was being tested in 2007 because one paragon of virtue called R.K. Anand, I call him so because he is, even as we speak, employed in some proceedings concerning his bona fides to remain an advocate because of his involvement in the BMW thing, what done to people for his attempts to browbeat, to put pressure on some witnesses in one high-state case. Now, that man goes to the High Court and says, look, this is very objectionable, you have to take cognizance of it. And the High Court promptly issues notice, and then comes his judgment. Now, this, one would assume that since this is the first case that is being heard in the wake of that 2006 legislation, which, gives me the statutory right of truth as a defense, one would assume that the court will enforce going to the veracity of the allegations that are the subject of that contempt proceeding. That would, one would assume, necessarily be the first step, or a step they would have to go through before they determine the question of contempt. Now, what does the Delhi High Court do in its wisdom? It sidesteps this question altogether. Why? Because it says, this is just a claim. The defense of truth, which the contemners are citing in their favor, is just a claim. I am not concocting this. This is the term the High Court of Delhi uses in a judgment that was passed just a few weeks ago in that midday case. It's just a claim. When it is a legislation that is already made, it is there in the statute book, and the statute is binding on everybody, including the court, and the court has no option but to interpret the statute book. This judge says it's just a claim. And I am not bound by this claim. Now, why does he say it's just a claim? Because you have to hark back to the old problem. Whatever you say in the contempt of court act is not quite binding on them because they derive their power, remember, directly from the Supreme Court. So, you may say anything in your ordinary legislation, it's just a claim in our eyes. Now, what I am concerned, the court says, what we are concerned about is that you made allegations against a judge, a sitting judge. Those allegations may or may not be true. We won't go into that. We are still going to hold you guilty of contempt because this particular judge, like any Supreme Court judge, would have sat in a division bench. Every bench there would have more than one judge. So, whatever you are saying against this judge would be casting a shadow on the other judges who sat with him. Therefore, I believe, the judge said, that your articles suggest that those judges are either dummies. This is again a term the High Court actually used. You are suggesting that those judges are either dummies or they too were involved in this scam. So, in either scenario, this is highly contentious and therefore I hold you guilty of contempt. Now, what happens to this whole statutory right that was given to us in the media just a year ago? The court brushes it aside as merely a claim and holds some of us guilty of contempt with this very ingenious interpretation. Interpretation which makes it, which signals to us that it is impossible for anybody to criticize any judge of the Supreme Court hereafter. Why? Because a Supreme Court judge never actually is always in, sitting with somebody else. And it doesn't just say other things. It also says you have slandered the whole institution. So the implication of this judgment is I can never write against any corruption being indulged in by any judge because I will necessarily in the process be slandering the entire institution. Now, one would think, I mean, you and I would think that there is an institution in which we all have a stake, we all have a stake in its integrity, and if somebody, some member of that institution is behaving in a manner which does not deserve his high office, and if somebody in the media exposes his conduct, then the judges who sat with him should say, my God, you were not aware of this. We sat with him and we passed orders in good faith. Thank you for bringing this to our notice. And one would think that they should feel grateful to us. Instead, the reaction is in this manner. Now, what does it suggest? What does this reaction suggest? This reaction suggests that they all feel threatened. As Justice Krishna Iyer very evocatively put it a few years ago, many in the judiciary suffer from what he calls sunstroke. Now, this was an instance of sunstroke. This was an instance of a Chief Justice of India's son, two of them, entering into business deals with builders at a time when the father was passing orders which are favoring the business interests of those builders. Now, the sunstroke phenomenon is the only plausible explanation for why the reaction from the judiciary has been to gang up against this whole defense of truth. And now that this has happened, I will cut short to my address. I'll come to the, I just want to end with this small suggestion that now that this has happened, now that we are delivered with the paper compliance, now that the High Court has passed its order and the matter is now pending before the Supreme Court, which thankfully stayed the operation of the sentence, now that the matter is before the Supreme Court, let us convert this adversity into an opportunity and corner the judiciary and pin them down on the legislation that is empowering us in terms of truth being a defense that is available to us. We will ask them, please tell us, if you are bypassing this legislation, if this statutory right, is it because this is an instance of truth not being in public interest? Is it not in public interest to expose this kind of corruption? Or, please tell us, lay down the parameters, lay down the guidelines, explain to us when is truth not in public interest? It's a very fascinating intellectual challenge. We all take it for granted. When we tell our children, you must speak the truth, now we have to be more sophisticated, more nuanced in our understanding. We have to tell our children, you have to speak the truth only if you feel that it is in public interest and that you are speaking the truth in a bona fide manner. You know, you have to now qualify it in this manner, because that's what the legislation says. So the legislation was, what the legislation offered us was very, very ineffective, very weak, but that's the best they could do. Now let us take it for whatever it is and challenge the Supreme Court. Ask them, okay, when is truth not in public interest? When is invocation of truth as a defense not bona fide? You know, and I must say that Mr. Raja had taken on the judiciary in a big way. You know, another member from, another MP from Tamil Nadu, not from his party, who's been making life very uncomfortable for the judiciary in Delhi. And some of us who are very assertive of judicial accountability are grateful to him for the five seats that he shows. So let me mention that before I end, because it's relevant to this subject. I'm referring to Sudarshan Nachiappan. He happens to head the standing committee that deals with the law ministry. Just as, Mrs. Karad was referring to a standing committee dealing with education, of which he was a member. This man, since he deals with the standing committee dealing with law ministry, he happened to scrutinize this very amendment. And this was his report. And he, to his credit, his committee foresaw some of these problems and said, this business of qualifying truth with public interest, bona fide, is going to only give Supreme Court and High Court enormous opportunity to deny the right of truth as a defense to journalists or whoever. So let us do away with it. he had the wisdom to make such a suggestion to the government. But unfortunately, as I said, not all ministers in the government are like Mr. Raja, because his minister there wanted to be on the right side of the judiciary. He wanted to score brownie points with the civil society. He wanted to appear as if he passed a legislation which gives you the power of truth, of offering truth as a defense, but with the other hand, he takes away all that by putting these qualifications. And what we see today in media proceedings, if truth was brushed aside so in such a cavalier manner by the High Court, it is a result of these qualifications that were introduced, and these qualifications were advised against, were cautioned against by the standing committee, but disregarded by the executive, and we are all reaping the fruits of that. So let us therefore now pin down the Supreme Court of that and, you know, turn this against them and say, okay, tell us, when is truth not in public interest and when is truth not bona fide? Thank you very much.